Hey there, this is Sophie. Before we get started in our deep dive podcast conversation today, I just wanted to let you know that if you enjoy our podcast, you might also enjoy some of the other great content we have available for you on YouTube, our blog, and on our website. Check it out, russellinvestments.com.
One of the things that I always ask advisors is if the regulators actually walked into your office today and asked you for a client list and then picked a random client, pointed to a mutual fund that you hold in one of those accounts and asked you why you bought or why you're still holding that fund for that particular client, could you actually answer with confidence? And do you actually have the documentation to help remind you and your client why they own what they do and how it actually ties to their goals and their current and future circumstances? One of the things that you have to be able to do is demonstrate the rationale behind why you're charging the client what you do. And are you managing their assets fairly? Where you get in trouble is if you're treating your best clients differently than your other clients. For example, if you sold a particular stock at the high for your best clients and much lower for your others, you might find yourself in trouble. That's why many advisors are actually going toward advisory solutions, because it actually creates a uniform process for all clients.
Welcome to the Helping Advisors podcast by Russell Investments. I'm Sophie Antel-Gibert, head of North America Portfolio and Business Consulting for Russell Investments' advisor and intermediary solutions business. Today, we're going to talk about regulation best interest, or RegBI, as it's sort of become known within the industry. Now, of course, that's the regulation that, in a nutshell, came into effect on June 30th this year and requires broker-dealers to act in the best interest of retail customers when making a recommendation of any securities transactions or investment strategy involving securities. According to that regulation, broker-dealers cannot place their own interests ahead of the customer's interests. Now, of course, this approach is not new for many broker-dealers, but now RegBI is sort of formalizing those practices and expectations. At the same time that RegBI is taking effect, though, there are, of course, a lot of other sea changes across the advisory industry that are influencing the way that the advisory industry is evolving. And that has implications for advisors, especially those advisors who want to maximize their potential and build a successful advisory practice for the future. Now, what might that future look like? What might a future successful practice look like? And how can the requirements of RegBI help us get there in the future? So to give us some insight into that future and how, you know, some practical strategies that we might be able to use for RegBI, to use it for a dual purpose, not just for how to comply with RegBI, but also how can it help us amplify our value towards that long-term success that we're trying to build. Now, to help us explore these ideas, I am joined by my colleague, Tina Downing. She's a senior director and lead for our business coaching team and has over 30 years of experience working with advisors, coaching them to reach their maximum potential. And she's even been an advisor and a producing manager herself. Tina, thank you for joining us today.
Great. Thank you so much for having me, Sophie.
Absolutely. So diving right into the meat of the topic, RegBI, obviously there's a sort of regulatory dimension to it, but when you think about it as an advisor and as a now a coach, what comes to your mind when you hear about legislation like regulation best interest?
Well, it's funny. I mean, when you said the words dual purpose, that really made me think about four different words that would totally apply here. One is discover. The next is understand, act, and leverage.
Oh, perfect. So you're using DUAL as an acronym for to represent discover, understand, act, and leverage. I love that, DUAL. So maybe let's take each one of those in turn, and maybe let's start with discover, since that's at the beginning of DUAL. And also, that's often where a relationship between an advisor and a client starts. What does it mean from your perspective and from your experience to have a well-defined discovery process? And why does that matter? How does that tie into RegBI? What prompted you to think of discover when we started talking about RegBI and dual purposes?
Well, you know, many times when you're talking about discovery, especially in a regulatory environment, we always think about it with the standard KYC, know your client. But many times KYC actually equates to the data gathering and the fact finding, knowing what your client's goals are, what they have and where they have it, and projecting out whether or not what they hold today as far as products and services will actually get them to where they want to be. But what's missing in that whole scenario is the why. And only until you really understand that emotional connection that your clients have to the decisions that they're actually making, will you truly know your clients. And so there's a big difference between fact-finding and data gathering and true discovery.
I like that. And I can see how from the perspective of regulation best interest, where it's all about doing the right thing for your client, if you don't have a good protocol for understanding what are their goals, circumstances, and preferences, what truly is in their best interest, then that can be hard to accomplish and to meet those expectations.
Exactly.
So Tina, you just emphasized the difference between fact-finding, data gathering, and actually true discovery. That actually reminds me of some research that one of our former collaborators, Jeff Belcora, did with and for us in partnership with Russell Investments. And of course, he's the associate professor in the Department of Surgery and at the Philip R. Lee Institute for Health Policy Studies at the University of California, San Francisco, and is also the director of Decision Services at the UCSF Breast Care Center. And he's done a lot of work with doctors in that sort of patient care and patient decision-making realm around breast care. And there were a lot of parallels between what he was observing in doctors working with patients in helping guide them in making, you know, life-changing and huge consequence decisions in a realm where most patients don't have a lot of expertise. And there were parallels there between that setting and also to a slightly different degree, but equally consequential in many cases, between an advisor and their client, where, you know, the client might not always feel 100% confident making big life decisions, big financial life decisions, and the advisor being able to guide them in that. So your nuance there, Tina, of how do I help my client make good decisions by really doing that fact-finding, data gathering, and that true discovery reminded me of Jeff's study that he did with some advisors that that we also work with. Can you maybe walk us through that?
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, the work that Jeff Belcora did with us, he actually recorded advisors and recorded how they actually took clients through that discovery process. And it was great that we had his expertise there because he saw clients when they were making some of the toughest decisions in their life when they were emotionally going through a very, very tough time. And what he did in the study is he divided the advisors into two groups. One group had active listening training or discovery training, and then the other group were advisors that had no training in this area. And he measured how much of the time the advisors talked versus how much time the client talked. Want to take a guess about how much time the advisors talked in that scenario?
I'm going to be afraid. It's probably knowing advisors and having worked with advisors a lot. And I mean, they're good talkers. They're really good at talking. So I imagine it's a pretty high number.
It is a high number. Advisors, actually, the ones that were not trained in active listening, talked about 54% of the time.
Just above half of the time in a discovery meeting, it turns out that the advisor is talking instead of the client.
Yes. And the advisors that had been trained, though, in some sort of active listening or discovery, talked only about 26% of the time. The other thing that he measured was what percentage of the time in the interactions between the advisor and the clients did the advisor ask questions. And the advisors with no training were only asking questions about 26% of the interactions, whereas the ones that did have training were asking questions 63% of the time, which is truly progress.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So asking questions and listening really is key to being able to understand.
Yes, listening is the key. You know, discovery is about listening and seeking to understand where the client's minds and hearts are as it relates to their families and the decisions that they're making, you know, especially now, you know, in this kind of environment. And they also have to help them think about the decisions that they have to make about the future, even if they're not thinking about those decisions now. And it's about having those difficult conversations with them about their health. You know, clients don't like to think about death and dying and legacy. And that's very difficult for us as advisors to delve deep in. But right now, clients are very focused on that more than they've ever been before.
Yeah, with the global health pandemic and stuff, it's sort of the topic of the day. And it's, yeah, that is hard. But then, you know, talking about it with my family is still different from talking about it with my financial advisor and thinking about it in terms of financial implications in the financial realm.
It's true. And sometimes families don't even talk about this with each other because they don't like to hear about, you know, making plans if something would happen to another. But think about, you know, during this COVID environment, some of the families were really put in positions to make some tough decisions during some of the worst parts of their life, times of their life. So having a conversation and preparing for it is really, they do look to us for help in that regards. And then you think about their careers. I mean, look at how many jobless claims there are out there today. Many clients are making decisions today, either voluntarily or involuntarily. There's some significant packages being offered with some of these firms, you know, and so maybe your clients are even thinking about retiring early. Or maybe they've been furloughed and they've just found out that they're not going to be able to go back to work. Those conversations have the clients in an emotional place that they really do need someone, a lot of times other than their spouse, that they can actually talk to about those things.
Yeah, that is really all encompassing. I mean, you talked about health, you talked about career, you know, we talked about families there. There is a lot that goes beyond so many areas of a client's life that have financial implications and touch finances that clients might not always think about or might not always think about naturally bringing up to their advisor. So again, that's where those questions are really key and making sure that we're asking the questions and then listening as part of that dual acronym that you used.
Hey, this is Julie, your productivity and readiness expert at Russell Investments. Sorry to interrupt your podcast, but have you thought about how we're going to pay for all this recent economic stimulus? Because the government has been writing some pretty big checks. And if we were honest, we all know the answer. It seems pretty certain that taxes are not going down anytime soon. So, as a financial professional, don't wait to have this conversation with your investors. If you've thought about switching your clients to a tax-managed approach, there's no better time than now to visit russellinvestments.com and learn more. Every year you put it off may mean another year of reduced take-home pay for your clients. And who wants to be that guy? You don't want to be that guy. People don't like that guy.
We've touched on, in the dual acronym, we've touched on the D, we touched on discovery, we've touched on understanding, the U, we've touched on L, the listening. We skipped over the A. What does the A, you mentioned ACT, represents the A. Can you talk to us a little bit more about that?
When you're actually tying solutions and products to client outcomes, it's critical that you do that with purpose. Because remember, they're making these decisions many times with an emotional component that you have to overlay. You know, I'll give you an example. You know, if one of your top client goals are managing the amount of taxes they have to pay. You know, we do a study every single year with investors, and we ask them, what is it that you value most about your client? And one of the top three every single year is tax management. And so if that is one of your client's top goals, can you demonstrate that you're actually considering different strategies for taxable accounts versus non-taxable accounts? Because this is a likely scenario that you're going to see because it's in the top three every single year from our investors. It's on the client's mind. So you have to have a strategy around it.
As an advisor, we wear so many different hats, right? We are We are the CEO of our business. We're also trying to ensure that our business and our team is adopting a client-centric approach. Now you've talked about, I need to make sure that I have the right product suite and product inventory, and that I have the right arrangement, sort of relationship arrangement with my clients. It's a lot of things to be thinking about on top of a strategic planning. And then also just the day-to-day stuff that, that needs to happen in a firm that as the advisor, as the principal, I am responsible for. Can you talk a little bit more about when you think about leverage, and I assume leverage is the last L there in the dual acronym. What do you think about when you say the word leverage?
Leverage to me includes three things. It's how you leverage your time, your energy, and your resources. And to do that, though, you have to really understand what your time is worth and what your team's time is worth. You know, and a lot of times when I speak at breakout sessions, I ask participants, you know, to tell me what their first job was and what their per hour rate was on that job. And mine, you know, I babysat for three kids. They were aged 12 months, 2 years, and 5 years. I was 13 years old. I made $1.20 an hour. I've never forgot it. And, you know, I remember it because to this day, I think about how much more valuable the service that I provided was than what I actually got paid to do it. And I believe that we all have the same thing going on in our practices. What we do is incredibly honorable and incredibly valuable to the client. And many times we discount that, you know, with our clients.
So this is like the Value of an Advisor podcast that we recently recorded with Dan Hodo and Sean Ryan, two of our colleagues, Tina, in that are regional directors in the field and work with a lot of advisors all around that value of an advisor and amplifying the value that we deliver to our clients while communicating it out to them and giving them also the confidence and conviction in the value that that advisors are bringing to them.
It's a must listen if you haven't listened to it already.
Coming back to here, Tina, so we were talking about leverage and how advisors can leverage their time and their energy and their resources. And you talked about, you know, having babysat for for a pittance, especially for three little children. Oh my goodness. But from an advisor's context then, so you're in the sessions, you have advisors think about what was the first hourly wage that I had, and then what do you do with that? And how do you bring that back to today?
Once you know what your per hour rate is, then it can help you determine what is a good use of your time. Not necessarily what's easy, but what's most impactful. And then determine whether or not you're spending your time doing the things that the clients actually value most, right? And as I think about that value to the client, you know, one of the reasons I actually changed to model portfolios is because I knew that my clients wanted to see me. They wanted to talk to me about their families. And I was spending an extraordinary amount of time actually managing the portfolios versus the relationship. And I thought I was doing a pretty good job of both. But when the markets get chaotic and, you know, and uncertain and unpredictable, you know, I felt more comfort in falling back to an asset manager like Russell that has an institutional approach to management with the level of information that I couldn't get. And so I decided to partner with professionals out there to help me spend that time making sure that I was doing the right things for the right amount of time with the right clients.
So if I wanted to act on that advice and think about the value of an hour of my time, do you have a shorthand way to calculate that? If you mentioned you're doing this in breakout sessions, is there an easy formula? I'm sure there's a really complicated formula too, but for those of us that are, you know, sort of back of the envelope here, let's just get us started. Do you have a good formula that we can use?
Absolutely. I had to keep it as simple as I possibly could. The easy formula is to figure out how many hours you work in a year. If you don't want to go that deep, use an assumption. Use 2,000 hours. That is 40 hours a week with a couple weeks of vacation. If you work with more than that, add more hours. If you work less, good for you, and reduce the hours. And then take the revenue that you have. You can use net or gross. It doesn't matter as long as you use a consistent number. Take that number, divide it by those hours. That will give you your per rate per hour. And then compare that to the revenue of your clients, you can see very quickly at a high level who the profitable clients are and who's not.
and where I should be spending my time. Okay. So that helps. So that then gives me, because I know lawyers and accountants always have at the tip of their tongue, what is their, you know, what is their hourly fee? And that's how much, that's how they sort of assess how much they're worth. So this would be our advisory equivalent of that, is sort of taking my production from last year divided by 2,000 plus or minus.
It's a good point, because every professional that your clients deal with work on that level, right? I mean, I think about, I just did some recent work with my attorney. He didn't charge me by the hour. He literally charged me by the minute. So as you're thinking about you as a professional, you bring as much to the table as the attorney, as their CPA, of any of their doctors. You're helping them with the health of their wealth over time. That's worth something and is worth quantifying.
Okay, so now we know what the value of an hour of our time is, and we're trying to apply that estimate so that we can prioritize our energy and our resources, presumably for me and for my whole team. What do I do next then? Again, we're thinking about leverage. What is the scope of that?
Well, you mentioned team. I mean, that is a huge consideration as you're thinking about leveraging your time. Does your team have the required expertise that's needed on the team to provide that holistic planning approach to the client? Do you have individual role clarity on the team? Are you structured in the right way? Are you structured in a way that actually optimizes the practice and enhances clients' relationship? And are you optimized with your team and their roles in a way that protects you from risk in the business over time? Roles and responsibilities, clarity of roles and responsibilities, and understanding the accountability and communication structure on the team is the last part of leverage.
This is really helpful. So if I go back to, we're talking about Reg BI and how it could serve a dual purpose, right? At the moment, yes, we need to comply. We've had to do that since June 30th. Most of us have probably already been, you know, doing a certain amount of complying with that, because that's simply been part of our philosophy and our approach to working with clients. But now we have, you know, so that regulatory impetus as well since June 30th. On top of simply looking at it as, okay, now I have this regulatory requirement, we can also think about it as a way to help me amplify my value for clients. And when I said that dual purpose, you said, oh, dual reminds me of discover, understand, act, and leverage. And you've given us some great ideas, Tina, for how to be able to execute on that and really make it be part of our, say, strategic plan for the second half of this year or for, you know, and going into 2021. At the same time, though, Tina, I know I'm looking at my to-do list at the moment and thinking, okay, great. And now she's just given me another fabulous 17 ideas on top of my already 42 things that I was trying to work on. Can you maybe give us some pointers, Tina, on where should I focus first? Like, if I can only take a bite-sized thing. So now I've got my value of an hour. That's awesome. But where do I go from there? And how can I rank prioritize where I should be focusing? Where might I get my biggest bang for my buck, both from obviously the regulatory perspective, but also thinking of it from a larger, I want to be successful in the future perspective?
Yeah, that's a great question, I think, to end up on, because when I was an advisor and I would go through our typical planning process for the year, I used to drive my team crazy, right? Because we tried to nail down our priorities for the year. But then I found that there was so much to do. And it's probably the same way a lot of us are feeling with regulation best interest, because we're not sure exactly where to start. And I found that one of the best decisions that I actually made was to sit down with someone that wasn't on my team, that could take an objective look at some of the things that I was doing. And they helped me really think about the foundational things that I needed to do, because many times I was putting the cart before the horse. I knew I wanted to do X, Y, or Z, but then they kind of brought me down to reality and said, you don't have time for that because you have too many clients. You don't have your systems, your processes systematized enough. So if I had to break it down into three steps, when you think about change in your business or evolving your business, not just for BI, but to grow the practice and to run a successful practice for a long, long time, there's three steps. One is optimizing the book, making sure that you're spending the right time with the right people, doing the right things by segmenting, setting your service model in place, managing your inventory properly, making sure you're not managing too many people or too many products at any given time. The second step is taking that service model to the next level and how you begin to build advocacy as foundational to the practice. So every one of your clients is telling your story about the experience of working with you. And then and only then, because I always wanted to jump to three to really revolutionize my business, you know, to take it through, to get breakthrough growth and productivity. But until I really looked at the basics, and no matter how many years you've been in the business, I was in the business for many years before I really started revisiting it. And it's not a linear process. It's something that you have to do over and over and over again to make sure you're building a practice for profitability, efficiency, client centricity, and sustainability.
Well, it helps to have, Tina, somebody like you at an advisor's side who has sat in their chair and has walked in their shoes, who knows what a day in the life of a busy and successful and ambitious advisor is. Ambitious for their own right and also ambitious on behalf of their clients, and really feels passionately about helping their clients be able to achieve their long-term goals and achieve those priceless moments in their and their families' lives. I know that you do a lot of coaching work with advisors. Could you maybe describe how do you help an advisor go through this process? I mean, you just talked about the three steps of begin by optimizing your book, then taking your service model to the next level, and then you almost the productivity and the growth and the breakthrough growth are almost the result of those first two steps, as opposed to having to be a focus in and of their own. They end up, you know, sort of being the outcome of having done the hard work and steps one and step two. Can you describe what that partnership and what that coaching relationship looks like?
Absolutely. So when we think about advisor practices, we think about four drivers of success, right? One is running the business like a business owner. The next is creating a client-centric engagement and defining the difference between service, which is the reactive things that you do, and proactive service, which is engagement. And then the third part of a successful practice is a disciplined product strategy, highly systematized and highly manageable. And then the last one is the team approach. And those four components we have actually put into our discovery process. We have a unique discovery process that we can go through with advisors. When we see you face to face, we can use a little card deck that we use as kind of a fun exercise. But knowing that we are still social distancing and we're reaching you online today with Zoom, just like you and I are today, Sophie, then we can take you through an online process. And the key is to narrow down your top three priorities. And then we can start looking at it to say, okay, are your top three priorities? Are you jumping to step two? Do we need to go back to step one to make sure you have the foundation in the right place to be able to accomplish those priorities? And one of the best resources that all of you have is our regional teams here at Russell Investments. Our regional teams are trained in practice management strategies. They bring us in as needed to go deeper. And it really is part of our offering. We're not just an asset manager. We feel like we're in the trenches with our advisors and helping you grow your practice to accomplish all the things that you want to in your practice and your life. That's part of what we do every single day.
It sounds like we are definitely eating our own cooking too, right? We started with encouraging advisors to do discovery, right? That was the D in dual, is do the discovery on your clients, do that true fact finding where you're listening and you're truly understanding what it is that are their priorities. That's how we start too. And then we also take a team approach. We encourage advisors to consider taking a team approach if they want to be successful in the future. We believe that that is one of the cornerstones to long-term success and of the practice of the future. And we do that as well. You're right, Tina. We definitely partner very, very closely with our regional teams that are in the field day in and day out and build tremendous relationships with advisors, and then we partner up and team up with them when they need that deeper level of subject matter expertise. And as you described, sort of having that objective third party that has sort of walked in their shoes for a while, to be able to help and point out where are some of the strengths, where are some of the weaknesses, where are the opportunities, where are the threats in your business today, and build those custom roadmaps and plans and implementation plans to be able to help advisors stay accountable to their own goals that they and their team have set for themselves. Well, with that, thank you, Tina. Thank you so much for sharing your insight into regulation best interest. How can advisors think about getting ready for that, making sure that they're ready for it, and also using it as a dual purpose of how can I use regulation best interest and the principles and the approach that underlie that practice? How can I use that to build my business of the future and my successful practice of the future? So with that, I want to thank you again, Tina, for your time today. And we will be back again soon with another episode of the Helping Advisors podcast. Thank you. This podcast episode was recorded on Monday, June 29th, 2020, in our respective home offices in St. Louis, Missouri, and Seattle, Washington. And thank you, as always, to Conrad Piper Ruth for all the fabulous production, editing, and audio engineering that he does behind the scenes.